Hello, everyone. My name is Michael Gruniger. Today is June 19th, and welcome to the joint SOCOP OOR presentation event. Today, we will be looking at spatial ontologies. Together with Gary Burr-Cross, we will be your joint session chairs. And the highlight today, it will be a presentation by Torsten Hammann, entitled A Reconciliation of Ontologies of Abstract Space from Mirror Topologies to Geometries. Torsten Hammann is a PhD student at the University of Toronto. He's one of my PhD students who will be finishing very soon, and we'll be hearing today the fruits of the past several years of labor on kind of extending mirror topologies in new ways, looking at kind of new practical problems that are driving the development of ontologies beyond the traditional sorts of mirror topologies that people have been working on over the past number of years. I'll just be turning it over now to Gary, who will be giving an overview of SOCOP. Today's a joint presentation between SOCOP and OOR, the Open Ontology Repository Project Endeavor. So people who are new to OOR, Gary, if you just say a few words in kind of overview of what's happening within SOCOP.
Yes, hello, can you hear me? This is Gary Burr-Cross. So I'm a member of the Spatial Ontology Community of Practice, or SOCOP. We've been organized for about 6 years, a volunteer organization made up of practitioners, researchers, and academics to investigate the use of spatial ontologies to advance the field of spatial reasoning and things of that nature. We're very happy to participate in this first collaborative effort with the OOR group, and we hope this is the first of many such collaborations. We have an implementation of an OOR, the SOCOP OOR, which is under development by Michael Dean, and you can visit that site to see some of the ontologies we have here. We're very much interested in some of the foundational work that Thorsten and Mike have been working on over the next last couple of years, and we look forward to maybe to collaborate with the COLOR effort and the SOCOP OOR in the future.
Thanks, Gary. And one other brief note with respect to the OOR project. So the work that Torsten will be presenting focuses on bridging the gap between very weak ontologies of abstract space, the more traditional, if you will, mirror topologies, where you have a basic part relation for mirrorology and the contact relation for topology, but also extending it in various ways with some more geometric sorts of relationships. And this has led to the introduction of numerous new theories within the CLORE project, the Common Logic Ontology Repository. And so it's kind of where the two groups are meeting today, SOCOP being the spatial ontology side and the OOR being the ontology repository side. They're kind of combining in some of these ideas, and Torsten will be presenting those ideas in his talk. Before we begin the talk, I just want to have a few words of procedure. If everyone can, I think everyone is on the chat, so I encourage people to post questions and comments there. If there are some burning questions, if you could put your hand up, there's a hand icon near the bottom right part of the chat session. If you have a really burning question, then you can put your hand up there, and I'll interrupt Torsten if there's a kind of a clarification sort of issue. Other than that, we'll probably kind of capture the questions on the chat and then have some time at the end of the presentation to address those questions. So right now it's 11:30 Eastern time, and we have a 90-minute block for the entire session today. So with that, I'll hand it over to Torsten.
Thank you, Michael, for the introduction. And well, this is already a pretty good summary of my work, which is not so much about developing new ontologies, but kind of fitting a lot of ontologies of space together and relating them in a more unified framework. So that has been the focus of my work for the last couple of years. That's why the talk is also entitled Reconciliation of Ontologies of Abstract Space. So if you advance to slide 2, the objective of the work is to kind of find a very weak theory of space that is that generalizes most of the existing ontologies of abstract space that can be extended to traditional geometries, but also to mere topologies that are more qualitative models of space, focusing on topological relations such as contact or neighborhood and partite relations. But there's a big problem with existing mere topologies that most of them are constrained to spatial entities of a single dimension. So for example, it can only consider two-dimensional regions and how they overlap or connect, but it cannot deal with a one-dimensional, a linear feature, how it interacts spatially with a two-dimensional feature, for example. And this basic generalized theory that I developed is kind of the basis for integrating diverse sets of spatial theories by showing how to extend this general mere topology in various ways to reconstruct, for example, classical mere topology or various kinds of geometries. And so this is kind of very abstract in its approach to space. Any other representation like vector-based representations or raster-based representation can, in this context, be seen as extensions of geometry again. So implicitly, it also relates those to the more general theories. Slide 3. Just to clarify, for this talk, that we are talking about abstract space and how it differs from physical space. Like often, we are primarily concerned with ontologies of physical space where some objects of interest exist that have some kind of identity criteria. We can say this is a city, for example, or this is a street. But those are very few in numbers, but the identity criteria is usually rather complicated. And they don't have to be physical in that they're consisting of matter. They can be kind of virtual administrative objects that have a spatial extent as well. But here we're talking mainly about abstract space, that is the mathematical abstraction of physical space into points, lines, line segments, curves or curve segments, regions, and higher dimensional equivalents. And many of those regions may have no counterpart in physical space. We may talk about regions of space that are not the space occupied by a concrete physical object, but that is fine on the level of abstract space. And at the very end of the talk, I will show how we can actually link physical space into abstract space using an idea borrowed from layered mirror topology, some work by Maureen Donnelly, that defines the region function from physical objects to the space they occupy, which is not an onto function because not every spatial region, abstract spatial region, may be occupied by a named physical object. Next slide, slide 4. In the next couple of slides, I will just give some examples of the kind of space we are interested in, and how more practical examples can be considered in this abstract way. So this is a simplified map of two islands that have various features, like region features, for example, the city or the lake or the islands themselves, but also linear features. Of course, those are idealized. The street is still has some risks in physical space, but for many practical reasoning applications, it's sufficient to just consider it as a line. The same for rivers. And then we can also talk about the intersections of streets or intersections of rivers with streets, which are bridges. And we can talk about point features that are just kind of standalone, like points of interest, landmarks. And so this is kind of the abstracted version of a real map. That's slide 5. Another example in 3D. This is taken from the Metro Convention Center in Toronto, where we can kind of model a building in an abstract way by just considering floors as kind of planes or areas which consist of rooms, hallways, but the floors are also interconnected by escalators or elevators that provide kind of some connectivity. So if you want to reason about how to get from the parking garage to the auditorium, this would be sufficient without any more detailed, like specific metric information or kind of the height of rooms, which are irrelevant in this case. But we may also be interested in point features here, or line features, like windows or doors or walls, because only the doors are provide kind of connectivity on the floor. The next slide, slide 6. Another example from a map, more or actual real map from the city of Toronto, where we may be interested in streets and the railway network, how they interconnect, and you can envision using a map like that to give kind of very coarse directions without having specific metric information that are more common in navigation systems. You could describe a route by saying something like you go up on Royal York Road, take a right onto Bloor, after the bridge you take a left, and the supermarket is just after the railway crossing. That would be sufficient to find your way on this map without any more detailed information. The example 4 on slide 7 is similar to the third example. It doesn't have to be a building. It may be like an aircraft where you have several floors that are connected. It's very similar as the second example. Next slide, slide 8. So those examples, to model the space in them, we don't really need full Euclidean geometry. We don't need any metric information. We don't need congruence. And on the other side, the traditional mere topology is really not sufficient to model this information, because we really have features that are intrinsically different in their dimension. So we've talked differently about two regions when they overlap versus a linear feature overlapping with a 2D region, for example. So my work focuses on bridging this gap, like bringing them together, finding this kind of multidimensional version of mere topology, and then from using that as a basis to develop more expressive ontologies of space, which can be mapped back to existing ontologies, and thereby using them to semantically integrate different spatial ontologies. Next slide, slide 9. So before I talk about the basic ontology, the basic mere topology that I developed, I want to go a little more into the general scheme of how to use the hierarchies to semantically integrate different ontologies. And by integrating, we really mean to formalize commonalities between different ontologies by saying, okay, this is the strongest theory that is shared by two ontologies. So it contains all the sentences that can be equally expressed by the two ontologies and that can be exchanged without losing information. On the other side, we have the differences between ontologies that are ontological assumptions that cannot be expressed by the other ontology. So that would be lost if you want to exchange it. Next slide, slide 10. So once we have this basic mere topology, there are two ways to kind of integrate other theories. We can either kind of take a bottom-up approach, starting with a really weak theory and keep adding axioms until it is restricted enough, or add a new primitive relation, a new concept that are not definable, but that are necessary in a specific application or scenario. On the other side, we can start with geometry and just weaken it until we get to the desired expressiveness by removing primitive relations that are unnecessary. And we may also remove axioms that make too strong ontological assumption. And, well, in practice, I actually use usually a kind of mixture of both, that you start at the bottom and at the top and find your way to the middle until you get the theory that maps to, for example, an existing ontology or that describes a specific application. A scenario. Next slide, slide 11. So, as we've already seen on the previous slide, we have two ways to alter ontologies. We have the option of adding primitive relations, which increases the expressiveness. Like, we can suddenly distinguish intended structures that we couldn't distinguish before. That's kind of the notion of a primitive relation. But on the other side, we have the idea of restrictiveness of ontologies. We can take an existing ontology and keep adding axioms to restrict it to a smaller set of possible interpretations. So the the restrictiveness is only influenced by the actants that we use, and the expressiveness is influenced by the primitive relation, but also by the logical language that we use to model or to develop an ontology. So if we use, for example, first-order logic instead of OWL, we have a more expressive logical language already. So we can make distinctions in first-order logic that would not be possible in OWL, for example. But here, for this work, we kind of assume that the logical language is fixed, and we use only first-order logic for all the theories, but that doesn't mean it cannot, we cannot integrate theories in less expressive logic, because we can also describe them in first-order logic. Next slide, that is slide 12. So we were talking about the two criteria. One is expressiveness, and the other is restrictiveness. So ontologies with the same expressiveness can be placed in the same hierarchy, and they're kind of ordered by non-conservative extension. The one is more restrictive than the others. Once we compare ontologies with different expressiveness, we have to place them in different hierarchies, because in each hierarchy, the way we structure them, in each hierarchy, all theories have the same expressiveness, like the same set of primitive relations. But we can compare theories in different hierarchies by comparing the hierarchies with each other. One hierarchy may be more expressive than another one if all the primitive relations of the less expressive hierarchy are definable in the more expressive one. So there are like two notions of ordering ontologies according to their expressiveness and restrictiveness. And that's something we use throughout Kolura. That's not just restricted to the spatial ontologies, but I will demonstrate here how to use that in the development of spatial ontologies and the integration of spatial ontologies. So now to slide 13, just an outline of the remainder of the talk. I will introduce the basic ontology, the generalized multidimensional mere topologies, and various restrictions thereof, kind of axiomatic restrictions, and then show in one example how to relate it to some other mere topologies. Subsequently, I will talk about two extensions in the sense that we add new primitive relations, first boundary containment and second betweenness. And then one of those extensions, the extension with betweenness, actually allows us to get a little closer to geometries in expressiveness. So I will give the rough idea how to extend those theories. Slide 14, the basic ontology. We can actually move on to slide 15. So just to give an idea of the kind of structures we want to capture, those are some examples of atomic entities that we want to capture. mathematically speaking, they're manifolds with boundaries. That means they're locally Euclidean and may have endpoints or boundary points, but don't have to have. The boundary can be empty. So this includes points, linear features such as curved segments, line segments, or closed lines, or all kinds of polygons, convex or non-convex, withhold, or curved in 3D space, or like higher dimensional object like a ball or like other 3D object or even kind of 4D, 5D, if you can imagine that. Slide 16 separated from entities that are not acceptable. Those are not acceptable because they either self-intersect or they have so-called double points where there's some point that is in the continuity of two different neighborhoods, and those are not intended. We don't want to capture those, but we do allow more complex entity to be composed of the kind of atomic entities I showed on slide 15, but for the composition, we require that only entities of the same dimension are composed into bigger entities. We can have a model where there are linear features, 2D features, 3D features, but each specific spatial entity must have a uniform dimension, must be either 2D or 1D. We cannot have a polygon with an extra line segment sticking out. Now to slide 17. To the axiomatization, we have two primitive relations. One is relative dimension that compares two entities with regard to their dimension, whether one has a higher or equal dimension. And this is kind of based on the idea that relative dimension is often sufficient to compare entities. We don't really need a specific numeric dimension, but we need some notion of dimensionality to distinguish linear features from 2D features, for example. The axiomatization is a strict pressure order, and we have various extension to a discrete order, a bounded order, like with a maximal dimension, and linear order. I provided actually the axiomatization in a link on the bottom of the session page. There's a link to my website where you can find the common logic axiomatization of all those theories that I'm talking here about. And then we identify a unique zero entity that is just for convenience. Slide 18. Our second primitive is that of spatial containment. The intended interpretation is the obvious one, that it's kind of a subset of the point, so the red entities always are all contained in the respective blue entities, and they can be of lower dimension. And in this using this containment relation, we can define contact as there's something in common that is contained in two entities. Slide 19. We have two hierarchies here already. One is the hierarchy of different strength of relative dimension, and the other is kind of a mini hierarchy of spatial containment with the definition of contact. And then we can combine them to a kind of more expressive hierarchy that I call CODI, the containment and dimension. And the basic theory just adds a single axiom saying that everything is, if X is contained in Y, it must be of a lower or equal dimension. But in this very weak setting, so we can define various notions of contact, and compared to traditional mirror topology, we have like this more expressive framework because we added the primitive relation of relative dimension, but otherwise the axioms are comparable to the weakest mirror topologies. Next slide, slide 20. There are three types of contact definable in this CODI theory, and they differ in the relative dimension of the contact. So in the first, in the top example, we say the entities partially overlap, so the shared entity is kind of the same dimension as the two entities in contact, whereas for incident, we require that the shared entity is of the same dimension as the lower of the two in contact. So a line can be incident with a region, or a point can be incident with a line, or also with a region. And weak contact or superficial contact is where the contact region is of a lower dimension than either of the entities in contact. That's the kind of touching or crossing or depending on the domain, how you would call it. So all those three relations are independent of the concrete numeric dimensions. They're just using the relative dimension. Slide 21. So this is kind of the basic theory, and then I developed several restrictions of that theory by closing it under intersections, under differences that everything has a complement that that intersects, and so this results in what I call the CODI down arrow theory, and then we can also close it under sums of entities, which is again a stronger theory. And all those functions are actually total functions. They work independent of whether we, for example, add a region and a line or two regions, but they may lose the lower dimensional part. So if we add a line and a region, we would just get the region again, because that is kind of the dominating spatial feature then. Slide 22. So this gives a more graphic depiction of the hierarchies. We have the two hierarchies of dimension and containment at the bottom with their primitive relation, the less than and the containment, and then the zero entity that's in either one. And then the CODI hierarchy extends the expressiveness of either one by combining them. So that is the solid arrow. And within that hierarchy, we have different axiomatizations that are ordered by their non-conservative extensions. Those are the Kodi basic, Kodi down error, and up down. So those are all in the same hierarchy. They use the same primitive relations, but they are more and more restricted by additional axioms. Slide 23. So once we have kind of those basic hierarchies, we can now start to try to fit in other spatial theories in that framework. I will only kind of outline the idea here. I have some more detailed slides at the very end that we probably won't go into, but you can have a look at it, and if there are questions, we can discuss it afterwards. So assume we have some external ontology S given, and we want to determine how it's related to the Kodi hierarchy. We want to find some theory in that hierarchy that S is a restriction of. Or we also say that T is interpretable by this external ontology S. So to show that, we need to prove the axioms of T from the external ontology with an adequate mapping. So the mapping is the mapping of primitive relations. Like S and T may have different primitive relations. So we have to express each of the primitive relations of T in terms of the one that S provides. And then we can try to prove the axiom of T, which shows that T is an extension of S. And if we do that in the other direction as well, we can actually say they're definably equivalent. And those kind of relations of extension and definable equivalent help us to integrate theories. We know how which ones are equally strong or what they share by finding kind of a weakest theory that is kind of in between. If neither S extends any theory in Kodi, and nor the other way around, we can find kind of a weakest common theory. So slide 24, a little more graphical. We have S given here, and we want to find this T so that S extends T. And, well, first we have to find the hierarchy, but assuming that we know it fits kind of into this hierarchy, then we just have to find the right theory within that hierarchy. Slide 25 gives an example result here that maps the inch calculus, another mere topology that hasn't been studied much at all. And while on slide 24, that was kind of an idealized picture, in practice, it usually turns out more like it looked on slide 25, that P is not actually a theory in the hierarchy yet, but it extends an existing theory. It's still in the hierarchy, we can kind of insert it, but we first have to find that extension, which is here denoted by the axiom CE4. And on the other side, we need to extend the inch calculus as well by some additional axiom to find a theory that is definably equivalent to T. So we don't map directly the inch calculus into the hierarchy, but some extension there. But this is fine because those extensions, the IE1 and E2, actually say what ontological assumption the CODI up-down error theory has that the inch calculus doesn't have. And on the other side, CE4 is an assumption that the inch calculus has, but it's not present in the CODI theory, but in the theory T. So that kind of compares the two theories with another, like the inch calculus and the CODI up-down error. So that is just an example how this semantic integration works. In my book, I've done it also for the region connection calculus. Slide 26. So far we've only talked about the CODI hierarchy. Those are kind of very basic mere topologies. But to really get to geometries, we need more expressive ontologies, more expressive in the sense that we need to add some more primitive relations. Just consider the example here. We have two lines that are in contact, and we cannot distinguish those three spatial configurations. That is, we cannot distinguish whether they actually meet in their interiors or in their boundaries. And on slide 27 is another example. The two maps are equivalent, except that I changed the names of the vertical roads, and they're actually identical models in the CODI theory, because it does have no way of expressing order between entities, between lines, for example, or between points. So to distinguish those two maps, we need some additional primitive relation. Slide 28. The first extension is by a relation of boundary containment as a new primitive. Slide 29. That boundary containment is kind of a refinement of the spatial containment that we had earlier, except that it, the entity, like the red entity, the X, must be contained entirely in the boundary of Y. So there's some examples here. And once we extend the CODI hierarchy by this additional primitive relation, we can define a whole bunch of other relations, such as interior containment, interior and tangential parts, and we can distinguish closed entities like circuits or spheres from non-closed entities. We can also define thick or thin boundaries, like the complete set of entities that are in the boundary, or the complete set of boundary parts. So, and this is just an extension by one primitive relation, but it's very expressive suddenly. Go to slide 30. So this new hierarchy has one additional primitive relation, and then more relations become definable. Now we can look at what other spatial theories are extension of this one. Then they're automatically also extensions of the of some theory in CODI. But we are always interested in finding the most general extension. Slide 31, I'm going to skip that part. 32. The second extension that I looked at is with betweenness to take care of the order between entities. If you go to slide 33, the betweenness that I used is quaternary betweenness relation that is relativized to a common entity, because we allow curved entities, curved lines, or curved planes. So the betweenness is always with respect to kind of a host. And if you look at those examples here, we say that Y is in between X and Z in R. And if that is the case, it doesn't mean that Y is between X and Z and some other S, as the rightmost example shows. And the betweenness, there are like various axiomatizations of betweenness. Michael has looked at them in more detail. I think there were like 60 or so that are now in the Kalura repository, but we use one of the weakest one of those here. But it would be feasible to also use a more restricted one to get a more restricted combination in the spatial setting. So slide 34 gives the new hierarchy that developed that is more expressive than the Cody hierarchy, but independent of the extension with boundary containment. And this hierarchy is actually the basis for extending the spatial theories here to more classical geometry. Next slide, 35. Classical geometries, I mean those that are built on ordered incident geometry, for example, Hilbert geometry or Euclidean geometry, and we can map those now to specific theories in the Cody hierarchy extended by betweenness. To do that, I first mapped incident structures into the Cody hierarchy and then extended them to incident geometry that are still expressible using only the primitive relation from Cody, and then adding the order that betweenness provides, we can actually say that ordered incident geometries interpret some theory in the Cody extended by betweenness. Slide 36 gives that more graphically. So we have incident structures at the bottom that are definably equivalent to some theory in the Cody hierarchy, and the same for incident geometries like near linear, linear, or affine spaces. But ordered incident geometry is an extension of the Cody plus betweenness hierarchy. We need the betweenness relation in addition. So the final part, slide 37, is joint work with Bojan. I'm not sure whether he's still online. That kind of uses one of those theories to actually model physical space, more precisely hydrogeology. If you move to slide 38. The intent here was to capture the speciality of physical entities that occur in hydrogeology, such as water bodies or containers that may host water bodies, for example, rock formations, vaults or caves. And there's some example given here. We, for example, want to capture how does the vault differ from a lake, or what special properties has a aquifer. And we use the theory, the basic topology that I developed, extended by a primitive relation of convex hull that is similar to the betweenness, but not quite the same. Slide 39. Yeah, I already mentioned that it's extend the theory with. Oh, we also need the boundary containment. Sorry, I haven't mentioned that. So it extends both of those theory, both of those hierarchies that I showed earlier on slide 36. And we use the concept of layered mirror topology to relate the actual physical object we are interested in to the space that they occupy. And some extra work that is included there is to distinguish between matter and object, and then we can classify voids not only by the host self-connectedness to distinguish holes from gaps, but also we are able to distinguish voids in matter from voids in object, like microscopic versus macroscopic voids, and more traditional distinctions such as cave from hollows or tunnels that Cassati and Rotzi did earlier already. Slide 40 gives some examples of the distinction we can make in this setting using the abstract space for distinguishing gaps from holes, and the distinction between matter and object to define what are macroscopic voids versus kind of microscopic voids, like pores in rock formations. To conclude my talk, slide 41. So I developed as part of my work a very generalized theory of abstract space, which I called the multidimensional mirror topology, and then showed how that is kind of the most general version of space that is common to many, if not all, spatial ontologies that we are aware of. And we showed how to extend it specifically to existing mirror topology, to incident geometries and ordered incident geometry. And in this kind of family of hierarchies, we can place various ontologies and then use the hierarchies to compare their shared assumptions and their different assumption. All those theories are axiomatized in common logic. I provided the link on the session page, and they will in the near future be included in the Clora repository. I used a lot of semi-automated techniques, theorem proving techniques to prove properties and consistencies of those theories, but also to establish some of the mappings to other theories. If you're interested in that, I can talk a little bit more about it. Slide 42, just some acknowledgement. Michael mentioned, most of this is work of my PhD thesis, but part of it is also kind of joint work in the group that we developed for Colora, especially the concept of hierarchies and relationship between theories. And here we specifically applied those to spatial ontologies. And the last part that I presented only briefly on physical voids is joint work with Boyan. It will be presented at FOIS in July this year. And some of the other work, the earlier work, has already been published if you're interested in more details. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Thorsten. Let's see. Going to the chat. Todd had a question. I think he's no longer online, although he still has a thing in the chat. But Todd's question was, is there any representation of joining one or more spaces to form something of larger dimension? So I think this goes back to your earlier, you had some examples of what you were considering to be the atomic entities versus the non-atomic ones. So maybe say a few words about that. I'm not sure if Todd's still online, but at least we can answer his question.
No, not really. There's not a concept of kind of constructing higher dimensional entities from lower dimensional entities. You can only kind of relate them to another, but there's no explicit join operation.
Right. So yeah, just if you maybe elaborate then the nature of the join of the. I think he had a question mainly about. Let's see which slide was it? I think he was referring to slide 16, I guess, the unacceptable atomic entities. And you kind of, I think you were sort of implied that although these are unacceptable atomic entities, they could perhaps be characterized by composing other entities.
Yes, that's correct.
Just to elaborate that, I think that was his question.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can compose the ones that are acceptable atomic entities to more complex entities that may look like the ones on slide 16Z, which are not acceptable as atomic entities, but which can be constructed as a set of atomic entities. For example, the middle figure on slide 16, the middle row, middle column, you could consider that as like three pieces of regions that are joined in a common boundary.
Right. Okay. Are there any other questions up to this point?
Great talk, Thorsten. You said if we are interested, you could tell us more about how you use like reasoners or theorem provers to help aid your work. Could you maybe show us an example or two?
If you go to this slide 34, like that is those proofs, like 34 and 33, those proofs I actually did automatically. Like automatically in the sense I used the theorem prover to prove them, but of course they have to kind of tune sometimes the set of axioms, we have to throw out some unnecessary ones or prove a lemma first, include that, then prove some of the axioms. And I have like a whole repository of the theories that, like the ones that I provided online, they also come, there are like many more theorems in there that were automatically proved that are kind of verifying intuitions of certain relations, like how they should behave and whether they actually behave that way. Like, I don't have any example right now here.
You mentioned like three different reasoners. I mean, do you have some insights after using them, I guess, fairly extensively to do your work? Maybe which one is suitable for what type of work?
That's a really tough call. They seem a little unpredictable. And Paradox itself is only a model finder. It's similar to Maze 4, if people are familiar with that one. But that seems to be actually the most efficient one. Like, I used it primarily to check, like, especially when you're interested in larger models, that was the only one that could prove consistency in a construct interpretation. The other Prover 9 and Vampire were pretty similar in their results. Most things I could prove with either one or with none of them.
And one other thing will be that within Calore, there's kind of like two main branches of the repository. One contains the common logic axioms for the ontologies, but the other big branch off the trunk contains proofs of all of these different results that Torsten's mentioning. So when you ask me for examples, once we get this all kind of uploaded into Calore, you'll be able to actually go and take a look at specific proofs and kind of how they're all related to each other within the repository. So that's kind of like the verification branch of the repository.
Yes, I will upload them, those proofs pretty soon.
That was just an answer response to Peter's question about examples.
Yeah. Sounds great.
More than just examples, we actually, I say, intend Calore to be not only a repository of ontologies, but a repository of proofs for the results that we draw from the repositories, or from the ontologies in the repository.
Do they generally terminate fairly quickly, or?
Usually, yes. Like, it's if they get any result, they terminate fairly quickly. If they don't terminate within something like 5 minutes, it's very unlikely that they ever get any result.
Yeah, I think the current record is 300 and some seconds for a proof.
Thank you. Practical insight.
Any other questions? I guess I have a question maybe for Gary. In terms of what do you see a possible viability of applying these kinds of techniques to the ontologies that are already, say, in the SOCOP instance of OOR? Gary, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, yes. Mike, I thought you had asked the question. I was waiting for a response.
Oh, no, I was asking you the question.
Oh, I did have a question, if I could.
Okay.
Towards the end, Thorsten, you talked about adding, extending the theories by adding other primitives to a more general model of space, such as direction and congruence, relative size, and distance. I was just very interested in that. I was just wondering whether you have actually started any of those things, how difficult you think it might be.
Okay, I haven't really started on those things. I'm just finishing up the other work. But I think it should be fairly easy at this stage. Some of them are way different from what we've done so far, like congruence, but other ones like relative size should follow quite easily and naturally as an extension. So yeah, it's hard to judge without actually doing it.
It's very exciting to think about that possibility. This is very foundational work, and much of the things that the SILCOP community has looked at are not as formalized, and bringing these two together will be very interesting. I was wondering whether the work with Boyan is foundational, or has it gotten to the point where you're actually able to think of applications, such as being able to query things with some of these models?
It is still representational work. Like we wanted to mainly capture differences in different kind of water bodies, but it is less foundational in the sense that it moves to a particular domain, kind of what can we do in this domain of hydrogeology to actually capture differences that matter, that the geologists or the hydrologists are interested in.
I look forward to that. That's very interesting. There's an effort called EarthCube, which is looking at the earth sciences as a whole. Boyan contributed to one of the workshops on that, but I think there'll be future workshops on this, and I think some of this work might be presented there and value to that community.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and I kind of agree. I think one of the things that we've kind of been focusing on in Kalore has been these kind of the foundational the core and complex of generic ontologies, and the generic ontologies so far kind of fall into these categories of time, space, process, shape, and I think what we're trying to do is use some of the motivation from either more domain-specific ontology repositories like say out of SOCOP, or some of these more domain-specific problems like the hydrogeology as a way of kind of like trying to identify what the kind of intermediate level ontologies are, the ones that are more generic than domain-specific but more specialized than the generic ones. And that's kind of what I find really exciting about this work that Torsten is doing and together with Boyan.
Yeah, just a comment on some of the ontologies we harvested from work out there is more like middle work. They may occasionally use some of the top concepts, but they rarely go to this foundational level. So integrating this would really be an interesting exercise.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that will be one of our next big steps in this direction.
I guess the other comment I'll open up for other people is I can see a natural follow-up to this discussion where we hear more about how these things were formalized using common logic and then the calorie storage of these things. That's a natural follow-up down the road on it, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you again, Thor.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Well, I guess we could conclude there. If there aren't any other questions, unless Torsten, did you want to say anything more?
No. I don't think I have anything to add anymore.
Yeah, if we get into anything more, we'll probably be here for another half hour.
Yeah. The details are quite technical, and hopefully soon the thesis will be available as well.
Exactly. Okay, well, thank you very much, Torsten. It's been a great presentation, a lot of great new ideas, and I think we have some very fruitful future collaborations with particularly the SOCOP community. And I guess that will conclude our meeting today. Peter, did you have anything else to say with respect to OOR?
Except that next week we will have an OOR session on content again, it will be co-chaired by Michael Gruninger and Mike Dean. So if either of you would want to say something about that one, since our infrastructure is pretty much in place now and we're stepping up the effort to drive content. So anyone who feels they will have content, meaning, I mean, they have ontologies or other semantic structures that would be a candidate for hosting in an OR, please come join us next week, same time, Tuesday.
Yes. Yes, thanks, Peter. Okay, well, that will conclude our session today, and hope to see everyone at the next week's meeting, as Peter mentioned, with ontologies in your pocket.
Great session.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.
Oh, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.